Vincent kicks it out to the wing. Bryson Langdon, a heave off the backboard. Time expires. The comeback is complete for Wright State. They're going to the tournament. They're the Horizon League champions.
Ah, yes, good to have that crowd cheering on teams to make it to the NCAA tournament. Wright State punches their ticket to the big dance last night, winning over Northern Kentucky, winning the Horizon League tournament championship 72-71. Wright State was the 4 seed and won that tournament, so there's a bubble buster right there. Also, yeah. The A-Sun championship is kind of odd. Bellarmine they joined D1. They won, but they're not eligible to get the automatic bid. So my question is, why are they in the tournament?
Yeah.
But anyway, they won. But then Jacksonville State, I think it is, ends up going on because they were the best team in the league. And Delaware, a 5 seed, wins the Colonial. There's another bubble burster. Bryant takes the NEC. They were a 1 seed. South Dakota State wins the Summit League Championship. And Gonzaga beats St. Mary's in the WCC Championship 82-69. Both teams will be going to the NCAA tournament, but Gonzaga gets the automatic bid, so nobody went crazy in that league and stole a bid. And so those are the teams that punched their ticket last night for the NCAA tournament. All right, state basketball today. We've got games on KD Country 94.
Yeah, we'll get things started this afternoon. Pregame coverage at 3:45 and tip-off at 4 o'clock. The 1A Division I state quarterfinals. First-round action between the Osborne Bulldogs, number 4 seed, and number 5 seed Maxwell Mustangs. Both teams coming into the game with a record of 21-2. And then, again, we'll have that on Kitty Country 94, kittycountry94.com, always on the smartphone app, Kitty Country 94 as well. And then coming up later tonight, pregame 7:45 and tip-off 8 o'clock for the Smith Center Lady Red in the first round of the Class 2A state tournament, as they're taking on the Jackson Heights Cobras here this evening. So stay tuned for that. Again, 7:45 pregame tip-off at 8 from Bramlage Coliseum in Manhattan. So those are our two games that we do have on the radio here today and this afternoon and this evening. You can find our complete broadcast schedule for everything that's going on our station at ncksports.com. If you're ever wondering which games we're doing or what games are on the radio today and tomorrow, again, ncksports.com has a complete schedule and all of the state tournament brackets as well.
All right. And we have the first game today is at 3:45. It is Osborne Boys against Maxville. Both teams are 21-2. Osborne, the 4 seed. Maxville, the 5 seed. Winner will move on to the state semifinals coming up on Friday. Loser done for the season. Jamie Walters, head coach of the Bulldogs, well aware of how aggressive Maxville is.
They're going to be up in our face, and we're going to have to take care of the ball. And they rebound the ball really well. I think they average 16 or 17 offensive rebounds a game, so, and 15 or 16 steals a game. So if they, you know, get 30 or so extra possessions over us, you know, it's going to be a long night for us. But, you know, hopefully we can go out, take care of the ball, don't give up any open threes, and handle their pressure. And, you know, we'll definitely have a shot.
All right, so here we go. It is two teams that have very good records, two teams that are obviously very good, and only one team will come out of it later today in Dodge City. Dusty will have the call. On KD Country 94, how you see this one shaking out?
This is tough because, obviously, like you just said, I mean, there's two teams that have the same records. They're basically the same seed, you know, 4-5, and it is what Jamie just said, that Maxville's going to bring a lot of heat defensively. They are giving up 45 points a game, but they score 62 a game. Osborne gives up just 35, and they score 56, so Osborne a little bit lower as far as their scoring this year, and they've really, Osborne's team that really has relied on their defense this year to have success, and that's what's gotten them to the 21-2 record. The problem with Osborne for this year has been that they've really never had everybody healthy all at the same time, and they're still battling that going into the state tournament. They have everybody, I believe, at their disposal, but not everybody's at 100%, and so that's something that they've fought throughout the year. And I feel like if Osborne would have everybody all 100% at the same time, it would be a pretty deadly team, to be completely honest with you. But the way it is, they go into state and they're already having a great year anyway at 21-2, and You know, look at Maxville, and they've got three guys that are in their starting lineup that are averaging double figures. Nobody averages more than 12 points a game. They got a junior guard, Alexis Baron, who averages 12 points and 6 rebounds and 3.5 assists. They distribute the ball well. Osborne is the same way. They distribute the ball well. They don't turn the ball over a lot, either team. One of the things that I always look at when I go to state is that assist-to-turnover ratio, and if it's high, a lot of these teams are really, really good, and they have more than one assist per turnover. So that's how you get to state. That's how you have success, and Maxville's a team that's just like that. So we've got a 6'6 junior in Ryan Kuckelman inside that's averaging 12 points and 9 rebounds as well. So somebody that Osborne will have to contend with a little bit in there, but they do have their own 6'6 center in Ronnie Thompson as well. I feel like that can maybe hold him down a little bit. Osborne coming in again at 21-2 and winning that Sylvan Lucas Substate in double overtime. Maxville, by the way, making their 17th state appearance, and Osborne is at state for the 13th time. So two teams that are obviously very familiar with the state tournament as well, and two programs. So it's hard to diagnose who's going to win the game. I think we're looking at a pretty exciting one here this afternoon, and should come down to the wire, to be completely honest.
All right, the first game today in Dodge City at 2 o'clock will be Opie, the 1 seed at 22-1 against Troisi, the 8 seed, 16-7, but they're from the Twin Valley League. You can never take them lightly, and they are an 8 seed. Osborne versus Maxville, 4 o'clock. Winner of that game will play the winner of Opie, Troy, Friday in the semifinals at 2 o'clock. And the bottom half of the bracket tonight in Dodge City, 1A Division I boys, it's Norwich, the 2 seed at 22-1 against Solomon. The 7 seed, 16-7, making their first appearance at state since 1918. And South Gray will play at 8 o'clock tonight. The 3 seed, they're 21-2 against Ness City, who's 18-5. The other boys' semifinal will be on Friday at 6 o'clock. That's a look at 1A Division I boys. 1A Division II boys, this is really Hanover's tournament to not lose, to be quite frank with you. Hanover trying to win another state title. They're 22-1, the 1 seed, get the 4-18 Central Plains Oilers. That's at 6 o'clock tonight in Great Bend. At 8 o'clock tonight, the 4 seed Buckland, 18-5 against Caldwell, 16-6. The 2 seed Greeley County at 21-2 will take on Pawnee Heights, who's 12-10 at 2 o'clock this afternoon. And at 4 o'clock, the 3 seed Northern Valley, 21-2, knocked off St. John's Tipton and won the Substate Thurible at high school in 1A last week. They'll take on Waverly, who has a record of 13-10 at 4 o'clock. So that's the 1A Division II boys bracket. Shifting to Manhattan, the 2A girls state basketball tournament will get underway today. The first game will be Sterling, who is the favorite to win another title. They won it all last year. They're undefeated at 23-0. They played a very tough schedule as well. They'll take on Mission Valley, who's 14-8. That's at 2 o'clock today. Sterling, a heavy favorite in that contest. And perhaps the best matchup of the day, I get to call it, over on KNDY out of Marysville, our sister station, the 4 seed Berean Academy at 22-1. Their only loss to Sterling by 5. And, of course, Sterling, I just pointed out, number one team in 2A, undefeated. Marine Academy making their eighth trip to state since 2008. They won all back in 08. They'll take on Valley Heights, who's looking for their first ever state title in girls basketball. They've been runner-up a few times, been third a few times. They've won a couple of state volleyball titles, but not a state girls basketball championship. They're 21-2, and they are the 5 seed. That game at 4 o'clock. At 6 o'clock tonight, Pittsburgh Colgan, who made it to the state finals a year ago, they're 21-0. They'll take on Garden Plain. I think that's a dangerous game for Colgan. Garden Plain 17-6. And then the nightcap, which we'll have for you on Katie Country 94 and katiecountry94.com. It'll be Jackson Heights, 22-1. The 3 seed against Smith Center Lady Red are 19-4. Tri-champions of the Mid-Continent League. At Smith Center, 3 of their 4 losses are to Kansas schools that were ranked. Their other loss is Superior. Jackson Heights has not played nearly as tough of a schedule, so don't let the records deceive you. That game's 8 o'clock tonight, pregame at 7:45 on Katie Country 94 and katiecountry94.com. Nick Lynn, head coach of Smith Center, his team ready for state, and feels that that experience that they had with a lot of these girls playing state volleyball will help out come state tournament time beginning tonight at 8 o'clock in Manhattan.
This group is resilient. You know, we use that word a lot, and you know, they say, you know, it helps to be on the big stage, and I think if the volleyball state tournament does that, then I think it's going to benefit us. I think it's going to be a little bit tough on the depth perception on the baskets, I think, but I think everybody faces that, and we're excited. You know, we don't know a lot about Jackson Heights. We know some, I mean, but as far as actually game type stuff, I think we're ready. The girls are excited, and we'll see what happens.
Jackson Heights, their only loss to a 3A school, Hiawatha, in the Hiawatha Invitational Championship by 11. Here's some interesting nuggets about Jackson Heights. They have won 45 straight league games in their league, but their league isn't very strong. And this year they've had wins of 43-6, 72-9. Their strength of schedule is not very good. They've only had two games that have been decided by single digits. They won a game by 9, and they won at the buzzer to win the sub-state semifinal against Riverside, or they wouldn't even got out of sub-state, not even made it to the sub-state finals. They do have two very good players, one averages 17 points, and an Olberton girl, another Thompson girl, had 22 rebounds in the game this year, averaging 14 points, 9 rebounds. They're the two key players for Jackson Heights. And they are at state for the second time since 1999. They won it all back in 1976 in 2A and was the Grand State champion as well. That's how good they were back in 76. And they made it to state in 2019 in 2A when it was held out at Hayes. Jackson Heights, a team coming in 22-1, Smith Center 19-4. And listen, I think Smith Center's schedule is going to help them a lot going into this game. But Nick Lynn said, listen, we got to protect the ball better. When I talked to him earlier this week, 24 turnovers against St. Francis. He said, listen, we did that in the sub-state final. We can't do that at state. We're not going to be able to get away with it at state. I like the matchup. I think it's the best possible draw of all the teams Smith Center could have drawn in this tournament. Jackson Heights and Mission Valley would have been probably the two I would have chosen, and they got Jackson Heights. So, and the bottom half of the bracket to me is not quite as difficult as the top half. You could argue the three best teams in this tournament might be in the top half of the bracket. You could argue, not trying to knock Smith Center or anybody else. You could argue that. But Smith Center's played some really good competition, as has Valley Heights, as has Sterling, as has Berean Academy, and I think those four teams stand out with strength of schedule. But first things first, you never know what the nerves are going to be like and how teams are going to handle everything. But Smith Center tonight, 8 o'clock, it'll be last game of the night, Manhattan, 7:45 pregame, Smith Center at state for the first time since 2013. This is their sixth state tournament appearance, Jackson Heights 11th, and Smith Center for the previous five, they made it all the way to the state title game. And last time, 2013, they won it all. Nick Lynn's got a championship as a head volleyball coach now, of course, recently, and also a basketball championship back in 2013. So, yeah, I think it's a really good draw for Smith Center. I really do.
Yeah, from everything you've told me, it sounds like it's one of the best possible scenarios they could have had going into it. So now you just let the chips fall where they may and go out and perform like they have all year, and I think they should be all right tonight.
You win that first one, and then you get to play three. That first one's nice to get out of the way. Then you know you're going to play coming up on Friday and Saturday if you win today. If you win tomorrow, you're going to play three straight days. Smith Center is lacking a little bit of depth. They do have some injuries they've been battling, but it looks like they're going to have those players that have been banged up that are going to be available for state, as one of them missed the sub-state semifinal. So it should be interesting. 3A boys today. Royal Valley is the 1 seed at 22-1 against Girard, the 8 seed at 16-5. Last time Girard was at state, they won it all, beating Beloit in a championship game a few years back. That's at 2 o'clock in Hutch. And then Southeast Saline, representing the North Central Activity Association, their first trip to state since 2017. They'll take on Osage City, both teams 20-3. That's at 4 o'clock. Heston, defending state champion, 22-1, knocked off undefeated number one team in the state, Cheney, in the sub-state finals. And they very well might be the favorite. They'll take on Hugoton. That's an interesting matchup. Hugoton very good at 19-4. And then at 8 o'clock, the nightcap, Galena, 22-1 at state for the third straight year, taking on TMP, who's been to state many, many times in school history. I think this is their 24th or 26th state appearance. And that'll be a good matchup at 8 o'clock tonight in boys 3A. All the rest of the brackets are available to you. I just went over the ones that are 1A, 2A, and 3A for today. And we will look at the schedule for tomorrow a little bit more in-depthly on the sports ticket. We can tell you, of course, tomorrow, Dusty, you'll have Osborne again.
Yeah,
at the same time.
Yeah, same time. Pre-game 3:45, tip-off 4 o'clock. Osborne girls, 22-1, 4-seed. Pretty Prairie girls, 22-1, 5-seed. Again, the same records, just one more win and one less loss for each team. So that'll be a matchup, too, that is just going to be tough to figure out who's going to win until you get on the floor and go out and play it. So we're looking forward to that one with the Lady Dogs coming up tomorrow as well. Yeah, 3:45 pregame and tip-off at 4 on Katy Country 94.
And then after that one at 5:45 pregame, tip-off at 6 o'clock, Great Bend, 1A Girls D2 State Tournament, St. John's Tipton. We talked about a great draw that Smith Center got. Really, really, you were hoping if you're St. John's Tipton that you didn't have to face Central Plains, but you do. Central Plains going for their 8th straight state championship, and well, in essence, they'd have 9, of course, if they didn't have the Final Four thing and COVID stopping everything. They're 22-1, and their only loss was to
I don't even remember.
Sterling,
okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you don't think Sterling's played a good schedule?
Yeah. There's so many names and schools that have been processed in my mind that I forgot already.
Yeah, Central Plains, if I remember that right, they lost to Sterling. Now, I remember Smith Center played Central Plains early in the year, only lost by 4. Another tough game on Smith Center's schedule that'll help them. So Central Plains will be a heavy favorite tomorrow night against St. John's Tipton. Blue Jays will try to pull off the stunner. Blue Jays 17-6 at state for the second straight year. That'll be in Great Bend, and that'll be on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com tomorrow night. So we got two games today on Katy Country 94. Osborne Maxville boys 3:45 pregame. Smith Center Jackson Heights girls at 7:45 tomorrow. Osborne girls against Pretty Prairie at 3:45 a pregame, and then tomorrow night it'll be at 5:45 pregame. It'll be St. John's Tipton girls against Central Plains. So we have four teams and three schools represented from our area. We have full play-by-play coverage at three different state tournament sites today and tomorrow. We hope to be very busy on Friday and Saturday as well. Make sure to download the free Katy Country 94 app on your smartphone so you listen wherever you may be. Now, it's going to be interesting with the weather. I think anything south of I-70 is going to be fine. There's not expected to be as much snow. It looks like the heavier bands are going to be the very northern part of the state of Kansas. The weather forecast that I read off today from the National Weather Service in Hastings is showing Manhattan about 2 to 4 inches, and then further south, anywhere from 1 to 3, somewhere in that range. And then in our area here, Beloit and Downs and along 24, Highway 24 in our listing area, we're looking at possibly 5 to 8, 5 to 9. And then just a little further north, Smith Center and Mankato along Highway 36, and then going into the southern part of Nebraska, that's looking a little bit more possibly. The forecast is 6 to 10 inches. We're talking snow coming in around 6 o'clock tonight. There's a winter storm watch from 6 o'clock tonight till 6 o'clock tomorrow. I've had many people ask me, what's Keisha's plans? I have no idea. I don't. I can tell you what I think might happen, but I have no idea. This is what I believe might happen, and I'm hoping it doesn't. And then when I looked at where these state tournaments are being held, and I see Manhattan is in a lower band of snow with the new revised projection, because here was my initial thought. I thought anything south of I-70, so Wichita, of course, Great Bend, and Dodge City, and Emporia, those state tournaments will be fine. Mm-hmm. I think they'll move on as scheduled. I don't think there'll be any delays. That's just my prediction, okay? But the tournaments I was worried about would have been, you know, Topeka and Manhattan. And maybe Salina, 5A, 4A, and 2A. And I thought 2A and 5A most predominantly. And so I told Dusty yesterday, kind of joke with him, but I said, hey, man, if you get done on Saturday, you might have games on Sunday to do in Manhattan because I'm out of here. I got planned spring break, get away for a few days with the fam, and got some tickets to an NBA game, and those are non-refundable. So I thought yesterday that we might be looking at a couple of the state tournaments that might get pushed back beginning tomorrow. We're going to get our games in today. The games tomorrow, if the snow ends up being as bad as some people are saying and projecting, I think you could easily see the 2A state tournament Manhattan, the Thursday games be moved to Friday, which means they shove everything back a full day, and then we'd be playing on Sunday. That's my guess. Let me repeat. That's my guess. I have no information whatsoever. I've contacted a few people that are close to the Kansas State High School Athletic Association. I didn't call them directly. I didn't. But I texted a few people I know really quickly, and they don't know what the plan is or if there's a plan B. I guarantee there's a plan B. What it is, we don't know. So for all those that are asking, we don't know. And here's the thing. We could go ahead and wait this out until tomorrow. And here's the other thing is a lot of the schools are already there staying in hotels. But the question is, there's probably a few that are going to be close enough to where they don't want to get the hotel and spend the money, so then they're going to travel. And those are the ones you're going to have to worry about because you don't want to put kids and coaches and people at risk, and fans, of course, too, at risk of traveling on some really bad roads. So we'll see how it plays out. I can't remember a time the state basketball tournament during my time I've covered it has been moved to where we played on Sunday. It might have happened once. I don't remember it. I do know Substate's been moved to Sunday a couple of times over the years due to some bad snow or weather or whatever it might be. So we shall continue to follow that. But as of now, the plan is to have games tomorrow, and we will plan on having those two games tomorrow, as we just mentioned, the Osmond girls and the St. John's Tipton girls as well. We definitely don't want to see weather wreak havoc over the schedule, but it's beyond our control, so we shouldn't freak out about it. And neither should you, ladies and gentlemen. Just wait and see. Sometimes these meteorologists are off with the snow stuff. They've been known to be wrong in regards to how much snow. So we shall see. Maybe the roads will be cleared well enough on the highways to where, even though if we get a lot of snow, it's still going to be okay. I just don't know. We'll play it out.
Yep.
All right. It's time for K-State in Focus. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. K-State men trying to keep their season alive. The Wildcats overall 14-16, 6-12 in the Big 12, and the only way they're going to go to the NIT or the NCAA tournament is to win the Big 12 tournament. Of course, you win the Big 12 tournament, you go in the NCAA. So the NIT is I technically don't have to have a winning record to be an NIT anymore.
No, I think if they made it to the Big 12 championship, the NIT might take
them. They might take them. Basically, K-State's plan to keep their season alive for them and their seniors. West Virginia, the 9 seed, K-State, the 8 seed. The only game in the tournament because Oklahoma State is banned from playing, which I still think is a bunch of crud with what took place. But anyway, Oklahoma State not playing, so there's just one game tonight, and the winner of this one will play KU tomorrow, 2 o'clock, KU to 1 seed. Pregame at 1:30 tomorrow on Z96.3 Lake, the Jayhawks against either the Wildcats or the Mountaineers. Bruce Weber on the third meeting with West Virginia.
Probably caught them off guard a little bit at their place. I'm sure they looked at the bench and warm-ups, and we had a chance at the end. Game at our place, obviously Sherman was really good. First half, they had some other guys make some shots. And then, you know, we found a way in the second half to just keep coming at them. And I think that's going to be the important thing. We have to be in attack mode the whole time because they obviously they're aggressive and just came off a really good win at TCU.
West Virginia, K-State, the 8-9 matchup tonight at 6 o'clock at T-Mobile Center in Kansas City. Scheduled for tomorrow, 11:30 in the morning, number 4 Texas versus number 5 TCU. At 2 o'clock, it'll be number 1 Kansas against the winner of K-State, West Virginia. As we said, 1:30 pregame on Z96.3 Lake. Number 2 seed Baylor take on Oklahoma tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. And number 3 Texas Tech against Iowa State, the 6 seed at 8:30. The Baylor-Oklahoma game will be on ESPN. Texas Tech-Iowa State will be on ESPN2. Texas-TCU will be at ESPN2 tomorrow morning at 11:30. Then Friday, the semifinals at 6 and 8:30 respectively. KU would be in the first semifinal at 6. And then Saturday, the Big 12 Championship Tournament game at 5 o'clock. And if KU continues to move on, we'll have all their coverage on your home for the Jayhawks in North Central Kansas City, 96.3 The Lake. More K-State in Focus. We can tell you Ioka Lee is a first-team All-Big 12 performer for the K-State women, as we had mentioned before, but in case you missed it. And also, we can tell you Serena Sindel, all-freshman team and defensive team for K-State was Ioka Lee. And the Big 12 Women's Basketball Tournament gets underway tomorrow, and K-State and KU won't have to play until Friday. K-State is a 6-seed. They'll take on Texas, and the 4-seed Oklahoma will take on the 5-seed Kansas. The winner of OU-Kansas gets Baylor. The winner of Texas and K-State will get Iowa State coming up on Saturday. And then the Big 12 Women's Tournament Championship in Kansas City at Municipal Auditorium will take place on Sunday. That's our focus on K-State Athletics today, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. All right, so big news out of the National Football League yesterday, where the Denver Broncos, there are lots of rumors for quite some time that, hey, Aaron Rodgers is going to go to Denver. He's going to be with his offensive coordinator from Green Bay, Nathaniel Hackett, his new head coach with the Denver Broncos. And then the news broke yesterday that Aaron Rodgers, as Dusty had projected all along, was going to stay in Green Bay. Now, these reports are being actually refuted by Aaron Rodgers. He's already said he's coming back. So yeah, he's going to be back, but he's refuted the contract numbers that are out there. But according to various reporters, Aaron Rodgers, at age of 38, is going to get a 4-year, $200 million extension that'll make him the highest paid player in NFL history with a $50 million average annual salary. Here's the biggest part, though. He's going to receive $153 million guaranteed as part of the extension, creating significant amounts of salary cap space available for the Packers to help them add to make a run with Rodgers to finally get back to the Super Bowl for the second time in Rodgers' career. He's made it once, and he won it all against the Packers with the help of Jordy Nelson, if you remember. And so the Broncos don't get Aaron Rodgers. So the Broncos settle for option B. And option B is a trade with the Seattle Seahawks. And the Seahawks are going to send Super Bowl winning quarterback Russell Wilson, who is 33 years of age, to the Denver Broncos. This is quite the trade package. The Broncos trade Drew Lock, quarterback Drew Lock, tight end Noah Fant, who's a decent tight end, defensive lineman Shelby Harris, who had six sacks last year, a good leader in the locker room and a solid defender, two first-round picks, two second-round picks, and a fifth-round pick. And the Broncos, they get Russell Wilson and a fourth-round pick. So the Broncos give up three players, two offensive players, a defensive player, two first-round picks, two second picks, and a fifth. So they give up eight players in exchange for Russell Wilson at the age of 33, coming off an injury plague the year, and they get a fourth-round pick. So the Broncos, let me repeat, are giving up eight players in essence. They're giving up five draft picks. They're giving up three players that Drew Lock could end up in the right place, maybe be a solid quarterback. Noah Fant's a solid tight end. They didn't just get guys on the practice squad here. Mm-hmm. And Shelby Harris is a respected, decent defensive lineman. And the Broncos get Russell Wilson at the age of 33. The Broncos put all their chips in the middle of the table. They struck out on Aaron Rodgers, so they go to the next possible option, and that is Russell Wilson. So congratulations to the Broncos, as they now have the third best quarterback in the AFC West. Because Mahomes is number one in AFC West. Number two is Herbert. And number three, and let me tell you something, Derek Carr last year had a better year than Russell Wilson. So the Broncos still might have the fourth best quarterback.
With injuries and things like that. You're talking about a good, like you said, he's 33. And
listen, if he was 27 or 28, as a Chiefs fan, if he was 27 or 28, I'd be a lot more concerned.
Absolutely.
But at 33, I'm not like, the Broncos had a better chance to beat the Chiefs head-to-head? Yeah. Do I think the Broncos have got are going to win the division because of this move? I don't.
No. They'll have to put it together with other moves, but they don't have any chips to play with anymore.
No, they don't. They gave up a lot.
I mean, I just, for who he is right now, like if they made this trade, like you said, 5-6 years ago, this would have been probably what the Seahawks should have demanded and could have gotten, you would think would have gotten.
Even then.
But right now,
it's a great haul for
the Seahawks. I feel like they overpaid for him, to be completely honest. But they needed a quarterback, and they decided that they weren't going to try to go piece this together again with a Teddy Bridgewater or go with Drew Lock again or whatever you're doing.
Which I don't blame
him. No, I don't blame him for that at all.
That's also on the organization for not finding that franchise quarterback and drafting one either.
Yeah.
Because they passed on two or three guys they could have had. They could have had Justin Fields and saved a lot of draft capital.
You had Mac Jones.
I mean,
he
was
right there. We were all like,
thought Denver's going to take
Mac
Jones.
Okay, well, thanks for that. Mac Jones is going to end up in Denver, and then Denver doesn't take him. And then now we're all like, well, thanks for that. Now he gets to go play with Belichick in New England.
Let me ask you a question.
A star, probably.
Let me ask you a question. Like, right now, it's an obvious answer. Who would you rather have, Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, or Mac Jones? Well, the question, you would want Russell Wilson as long as he's healthy. But 3 years from now, who do you think you'd want?
It's probably not Russell Wilson.
I know, exactly.
I
And you could have had him for simply drafting
him. After the first year of each person's career, if you asked me projecting, it'd be Mac Jones is what I would say.
Right.
But I don't know what Justin Fields is going to do with his new coach and the new system there in Chicago. So, they had the opportunities to do it. Now they've given up four first, second round combined draft picks when they could have just used one.
Yes, one first round pick and got him. And you would have the rookie contract.
Exactly.
Now you're going to take on more money with Russell Wilson, a lot more than Drew Lock.
I think that's the bigger dynamic of what happens with the Broncos. Not if they win this year, but how is this going to handicap them with what they want to do moving forward? Because like you said, this one move I don't feel like puts them where they need to be to win a division.
I think it's a decent fit for Russell Wilson. He's going to have a good defense, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's had good defenses, he's played fairly well in Seattle. Seattle's defense hasn't been good the last couple of years. Of course, their running backs have been always hurt. But going to Denver, and I know Denver's got some younger, talented receivers, Judy and Sutton, but he had DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. He don't have those two in Denver.
No.
So that will be interesting, too. And then, of course, what are you going to do in protecting Russell Wilson? Because he did not have a good offensive line in Seattle, one of the reasons why he got hurt. I think Russell Wilson is a competitor. I think he's a heck of a player. I think he's towards the end of his prime. My oldest son said, can you believe Denver gave up all that for Russell Wilson? I said, no, I can't. And he said, why would you give up all that for a guy that's at the end of the prime of his career? And I said, because you're desperate.
Yeah.
That's what it is. I mean, listen, if the Broncos get two really great years out of Russell Wilson, is it worth it? Possibly. I guess it depends on what you do in the playoffs or if you can actually make a Super Bowl run. But I mean, Think about this. The Chiefs once again beat the Broncos because the Chiefs traded up and got their franchise quarterback and moved out 17 spots and traded a lot less than the Broncos are trading for a guy that's 33. Think about that for a second.
Absolutely.
The Chiefs traded up and got their franchise guy that they're going to have who's 7 years younger than Russell Wilson. So 7 more years of Patrick Mahomes, ideally health-wise. So you're getting a guy, obviously young right out of the draft, the Chiefs got, and they traded up from 27 to 10. They didn't give up nearly as much as the Broncos did to trade to get Russell Wilson. And on top of that, the Broncos had two quarterbacks they could have drafted this year that they just simply passed on, and Justin Fields and Mac Jones. If I'm a Chiefs fan, I'm not shaking my boots at all. I'm going, well, wow, you have to, you got to pay the guy a lot more money. It's going to hurt you on the cap. And you're giving up some talent, and you're giving up a ton of draft capital. And you could have just taken your quarterback or traded up to get the guy you really wanted and made a bold move like the Chiefs did. So the Chiefs, honestly, a better run organization right now and did it back then. Now, prior to the Chiefs drafting Mahomes, I would say both organizations doing fine. And the Broncos always had the quarterback, you know, Elway and then Manning, not always a quarterback because Tim Tebow was there for a while, but he won a playoff game.
Yeah.
But now you look again and you're like, man, that sounds like something the Chiefs would have done. Remember, they get that San Francisco 49er quarterback and they go trade and get, you know, Elvis Gerback or, you know, they bring in Steve DeBerg or they get David Craig or they trade and get Alex Smith, which they didn't give up nearly as much to get Alex Smith,
not
obviously.
Even close.
And I could argue Russell Wilson and Alex Smith. Yeah, Russell Wilson's a better quarterback. Yes, I would agree when they're both healthy. But I wouldn't say Russell Wilson's way, way head and shoulders above Alex Smith. I just think the Broncos gave up a ton. And I'm interested to see how this plays out because I'll give credit to the Broncos. They're tired of being average. They're tired after going with, you know, makeshift quarterbacks last few years. And they, you know, if they would have hit on Drew Lock, then they would have been looking really brilliant right now. But they'd missed on that one. But they're putting all the chips in, and they're all in right now. And this could really blow up in their face a few years from now.
Yeah, absolutely,
and I'm hoping it does. But yeah. We shall see.
Yeah, I have no problem with it if it ends up handicapping them by giving up all these draft picks. And but it's nice to have this quarterback in the draft. Can't do it. We don't have that pick.
Think about it. Think about it. The easiest way to summarize this is the Broncos gave up 8 players for 2 players and take on a lot more salary.
Yeah.
So, all right. The franchise tags have been laid out there. Not every team used their franchise tag. The deadline was 3 o'clock yesterday. The Bengals used their franchise tag on safety Jesse Bates. The Browns used it on their tight end David Njocho. The Cowboys used it on their tight end Dalton Schultz. The Packers used it on Davante Adams, which is smart because you bring back Rodgers, you better have Davante Adams on your team. Cam Robinson, offensive lineman, Jaguars. Orlando Brown, of course, franchised by the Chiefs. The Chiefs left tackle. Now, all these franchise tags, you have until July 15th to work out a deal, a long-term deal. If you don't, then they play under the tag for 1 year. And Brown is slated to make $16.662 million no matter what happens next year. The Dolphins use their franchise tag on Mike Gesicki, another tight end. The Patriots did not use their tag on cornerback J.C. Jackson, as some people thought they would. And the Buccaneers, I thought, was interesting. Chris Godwin, who had a huge year, 97 catches, a ton of yards, but he had Tom Brady as a quarterback. He blew out his ACL late in the year. I thought he might be a guy the Chiefs could go after. Now they'd have to trade for him. And the tag, the Buccaneers tag, Chris Godwin, $19.2 million he'll get next year no matter what. And then I have a friend that's all excited because, and I think he's, you know, tongue-in-cheek joking, but he's a K-State fan. He goes, Russell Wilson went to Denver. Tyler Lockett doesn't have a quarterback now. Well, yeah, he does, Drew Lock. But, or Geno Smith. Woo, that's exciting. And he goes, Chiefs need a trade for Tyler Lockett. Okay, first of all, a couple things here. The Chiefs don't need a trade for Tyler Lockett, and the Chiefs have many more bigger needs than wide receiver. And let's be honest about it. I know Mecole Hardman has been a punching bag most of the year, and even during his career. Mecole Hardman had a bit of a breakout year. He's behind Kelsey and Hill. He ain't going to put up 1,000 yards receiving every year. Mecole Hardman had his best year as a pro as the number two wideout. He came on towards the end of the season. They might have figured out how to use him a little bit better, the Chiefs did. I still think the Chiefs, you know, if they re-sign Pringle, I think D-Rob's obviously gone and let him go, and that's fine. I do think the Chiefs could have a need for a veteran free agent wide receiver like an Allen Robinson is the one I keep coming back to, the Bears, who was kind of banged up and has never played with a great quarterback. Who knows what he could do? Taller target, I think, would be good for the Chiefs offense, a good possession receiver. I think that would make sense. There's other free agent receivers that are out there. You know, Juju Smith-Schuster is a guy that was interested in Kansas City last year. And the wide receivers in the draft, it's a deep class of wide receivers. And the Chiefs might have one sitting there, you know, at the end of the first round with the 30th pick overall. Some people have said Jameson Williams, Alabama, who tore his ACL in the national title game. I don't think he's going to slip that far myself. But if he did, the Chiefs might take him best player available. So the Chiefs have many bigger needs than wide receiver. Would I like the Chiefs to get another wide receiver, and a veteran free agent like Allen Robinson, or draft a young, super talented wide receiver? Yeah, absolutely. In a perfect world, I would. And that would be my choice over trying to trade for Tyler Lockett. I love Tyler Lockett. And trust me, I remember when the Seahawks drafted Lockett, I'm like, darn, I wish the Chiefs would have drafted Tyler Lockett. Because I was very convinced Tyler Lockett was going to be a really good NFL player. Maybe not as great as he is, but I thought he'd be really good. I think you did too.
Absolutely.
And the Chiefs didn't draft him then. But you don't trade draft capital, you don't trade and go get Tyler Lockett when you already have Tyreek Hill, who's negotiating a new contract extension. You got Kelsey on the books. And also, if there was not much out there on the free agent market for wide receiver, and this year's draft class was really bad at wide receiver, and the Chiefs really felt like they needed a bona fide number two receiver, which to me they already have two, and that is Kelsey is like a wideout, and then Hill. So you want to talk about a third option. You can still go get Sammy Watkins for cheap if you want, but he's always hurt. I mentioned Juju Smith-Schuster, Allen Robinson. There's others. Why would the Chiefs give up? They're going to have to give up significant draft capital to get Tyler Lockett. To me, that would make absolutely no sense whatsoever. None. Now, if the Seahawks cut Tyler Lockett tomorrow, now, hey, I'm all in. But the Seahawks aren't going to do that. And Major League Baseball, the latest news is that representatives from MLB and the Players Association had another marathon day and night of bargaining sessions in New York, trying to reach a deal for a new CBA to end the baseball owner-imposed lockout. And they talked for quite some time, and they talked all the way until earlier this morning at 3 a.m. Eastern, 2 a.m. Central. They were setting yesterday as a MLB's third deadline for a 162-game season, so it appears we are moving towards a fourth deadline. The league contends that if a deal is reached today, players could be in spring training by Friday, and a 62-game season could be played with players receiving full pay and service time. Games that have already been canceled would be made up through doubleheaders, off days, etc. I said this when the owners said we're going to cancel games. It was a bluff. It was a scare tactic. And I believe that all along. I know that they don't make a ton of money in April, but they still would rather see games than not games, I would think. So I'm not surprised at all. Oh, what do you know? We can just go shorter spring training and we can still have 162 games. Well, that would be great for all the people that work at the stadium. That would be terrific.
Yeah.
And both sides apparently have kicked in a little bit of money to help those workers that are affected by the greed of both sides, if you want to call it both sides.
Started with like the spring training people that are going to be missing out, whether that's the people or the businesses in those towns to help their economies and things that they're going to miss out on.
Absolutely. So, well, that's good, I guess. But anyway, we'll see what happens as we talk about. The owners will impose the lockout. Now we'll see if the Players Association and the owners can agree on a CBA and go from there. So
I keep getting emails from the Wichita Wind Surge because I've gone to a couple games and ordered tickets through their website. They're like, season starts in a month. I'm like, does it? I hope it does.
right. I still get stuff from the Royals. I'm like, I can't make any plans until I know you're going to have a season.
Yeah. It's funny that all this stuff is basically auto-emailed to you. Put it on hold for a second.
I think a lot of people putting stuff on hold, and that makes it tough for the people trying to do their job. Let's say, for instance, in the front office of the Royals, trying to sell season tickets, trying to sell suites, trying to set up bus trips like we do, which we would love to do one because we haven't done one the last 2 years because of COVID. But there's really no point in wasting a lot of time for our end until we know there's going to be a season and see what the schedule looks like because it'll be revised.
Oh, yeah. And I want to take my nephews to a Wind Surge game again, right? Like just to hang out, have fun. And I can't do that right now. I know what night I want to go, but I can't. I don't want to get the tickets until.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Till it's out.
I hear you.
Till this lockout is over.
That would be great if it was. All right. High school basketball again today.
Yes. Katie Kunch 94. We get things started 3:45 pregame. Tip off at 4 o'clock. The Osborne boys against Maxville in Class 1 and Division 1 there in Dodge City, United Wireless Arena. And then later tonight, 7:45 pregame. Tip off 8 o'clock. The Smith Center girls against Jackson Heights in Class 2A here tonight on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com.
All right. Enjoy all the state basketball, folks. Hope you enjoy the coverage. Thanks to our sponsors for making it possible.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.